Broadcasting live from the Biz 1190 studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for the Business Radio X Week in Review. We know you're busy, so we've got you covered. Catch up on the week's top Atlanta business headlines and meet the industry execs and thought leaders who move Atlanta's bottom line. Now, here's your host, Dana Barrett.
Good afternoon. It is Sunday, December 15th. 9 shopping days until Christmas, 10 actual days. So get out there, do your shopping, be a good consumer. This is the Business Radio X Week in Review. I'm Dana Barrett, and as always, with me today, producer Mike Roy. How are you, sir?
Good, and that message about Christmas shopping is more important than telling people who we are.
That's right. I went right to Christmas. I went right to shopping. I went right to the mall.
And next week will be even worse, I'm assuming.
All the last-minute shoppers. Yes. All the amateurs will be out next week. it's funny. I was thinking about that today. I was thinking, it's like, you know how after January 1st, everyone hits the gym? Like, everyone who doesn't go to the gym all year long makes a New Year's resolution, and they go out to the gym. And the people who go to the gym all the time get really annoyed because they're like, what are all you amateurs doing here? Like, we're here all year. Now you're taking up my treadmill. You're on my weight machines. Get out of the way. Well, I feel like that at this time for shoppers. Like, I'm a professional shopper, dude. Like, all you amateur shoppers need to get out the way. That's all I'm saying. All right. Once again, this is the Business Radio X Week in Review. You can call us in the studio here because, Mike Roy, we are live.
Yes.
We are. And the number is 404-231-1190. You can also tweet us. Either tweet me directly at Dana H. Barrett, or you can just use the hashtag BizRadio, B-I-Z Radio. So as always, we've got some headlines to catch you up on. That's what we do here at Week in Review, let you know what you missed this week. Also, some great clips from BusinessRadioX.com from the week prior. And because it's Christmas time and some of my clips kind of led me in this direction, I kind of want to have a theme for the show today. We're going to sort of talk about family and business, the intersection of family and business on a couple of different levels. One, is it a good idea to work with your actual family members? A lot of people do it. A lot of people would never do it. So there are times when it works, times when it doesn't. And, I have done it. I don't think I want to do it again, but no offense to my family. Love you all. Mean it. And then there's also this whole idea of calling your corporate family, your corporate group, your employees, your colleagues, your family. So they're not your actual family, but you're sort of maybe trying to create a family environment at work. And I have mixed feelings about that as well. Is that just a ploy? Is it real? Is it authentic? Is it just a marketing shtick? Do the employees actually feel like they are part of the family? So we'll get into all that as the show moves along. But before we do that, I do have a couple headlines I want to catch you up on. So I know we've been talking a lot over the last probably month now about the Braves move to Cobb County. So a couple of headlines that caught my eye this week that I wanted to catch you up on. One is, I know I mentioned a few weeks ago that the Tea Party leader, the Atlanta Tea Party leader, Debbie Dooley, was sort of like really against this whole Cobb Braves move. And I don't think it was because the Braves are moving to Cobb and leaving Fulton, but I think she, from what I understand, she really feels like there were a lot of inside deals and a lot of, stuff going on under the covers that was not fair, legitimate, or possibly even legal. And so she and her group, which has a Cobb County chapter, are working still, just so you know, to potentially oust some of the Cobb County leaders that made this happen. One in particular is a guy named Tim Lee, who is the Cobb Commission chairman. And there was also a headline about him, which questioned his tie, get this, to a turf firm. So he made this deal to get the Braves out there, and it turns out that when he's not being a Cobb County commissioner, he actually works, he owns a company or works for a company, I'm not quite clear on that, who has only one customer of this company, and their customer is a company called Tenkate, which is a turf company that the Braves have used for in the past. So, coincidence? I wonder. I don't believe in coincidence so much. But I leave that up to you. And as always, even though I kind of surf the headlines for you here on the show, I kind of ask that you don't surf the headlines and go out and maybe Google a little bit before you pass judgment. Anyway, some other crazy stories this week that I just couldn't help but share. They're crazy. They're not related one to the next, but these three headlines popped out at me. So first I'm going to share the least crazy of them, and that is, well, I guess it's not that it's not the least crazy if it happened to you, but apparently a bunch of Wells Fargo customers ran into a bill pay glitch, easy for me to say, where they thought they paid their bill. In fact, they did go online and pay their bill, but then the vendor, whoever they were trying to pay, Georgia Power or whoever it was, didn't get paid. And so they started getting late notices and fees and all kinds of crazy stuff. And it was Wells Fargo's fault. So oops-a-daisy. And they have a lot of making up to do, you know. That's a piece of business. You know, I'm one of those people that sometimes hesitates to adopt new technology. Now, online bill pay is not new technology anymore. And I was not an early adopter of that technology. I waited a little while because I was afraid of something like this. So here we are, however many years down the road, and it's happening now? Oi, you know, like scary stuff. That I would not want that to be.
Oh, that would make me so angry.
I know.
Because you know you paid it, and it's not showing up at all, so you're getting harassed by all these late fees, et cetera.
Right, and you're like, I did it. I have proof. Look, it's right here in my bill pay.
And I love online bill pay. It's much better than mailing a check and buying a stamp.
Way better. I was late so many times back in those days. I had all kinds of late fees and whatever because I didn't have stamps, or I didn't have I got the bills all set and I set them on my car seat and didn't put them in the mailbox, you know, or whatever. So, yeah, not so good. All right, I want to play this clip for you before we run out of time. I'm already running my mouth so much that we're running out of time before our first commercial break. So, our first clip is from the Gwinnett Business Radio Show, hosted by Mike Salmond and Stephen Julian. And this one is sort of family related in that it's Joel Levinson that they're interviewing. He's the vice president of a family-owned company called Dynasty Jewelry and Loan in Norcross. It's a pawn business. And this clip is right after Mike asked him if the TV show Pawn Stars has hurt or helped the business. So take a listen.
It's only helped our industry as a whole. It really has. There's been so much more buzz around a pawn shop. It's actually brought us into a, you know, more desirable light. And you have people that have never, ever walked into a pawn shop before, and now they watch the show. They feel like they're a part of it. They want to know what their items were. So now you're getting people that are CEOs of corporations or, you know, anybody that wants to come in and look for that rare item or wants a Patek Philippe watch and things like that. So it's bringing in a customer that's never been into a pawn shop, and it's awesome for us because it's almost free advertising. They want to come into our shop, and I love when people do, because their first thing when they walk in is like, whoa, this is a pawn shop? And it's the best feeling in the world.
Well, if you just go to the website and look at the store, it looks like a jewelry store. Sure. I mean, it does not look like a pawn shop. And does it work like we see on TV? I mean, do people walk in and they have an item and they want to start negotiating with you right away? Is that how the process works if they want to sell or get a loan?
Except with no cameras around, I would think. Right. So go ahead.
Well, we got a lot of cameras in there.
Well, there's cameras, but not TV film crews.
Right. Well, it's essentially the same, but you know, someone coming in for a $30 loan on their ring is usually weeded out of the Pawn Star shows. You don't really see that because it doesn't make great television. It's a little bit different, but yes, people do come in. They want to negotiate because ultimately, if they want to sell the item, they want to get the most money they can for it. Where we understand that, but we also need to leave room for profit after writing it up, doing all the reporting, keeping our lights on. We have to make a certain amount of profit per item. So sometimes it's difficult to negotiate that because what a consumer might think their item's worth, you know, we have to loan at a lower amount or buy at a lower amount so then we can sell, make profit, and pay our employees, keep our lights on, pay taxes, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's a little bit different than what you see on TV, but the concept is the same.
All right. Again, that was Joel Levinson, the vice president of the family-owned Dynasty Jewelry and Loan in Norcross, and that was from the Gwinnett Business Radio Show, which you can hear the whole interview if you go to gwinnettbusinessradio.businessradiox.com. And there was a couple reasons I like that clip. And first of all, I love Pawn Stars. I hate to admit it, but I love that show. It's so funny. The dad, not the like the older guy, I can't think of his name, but oh my God, that show cracks me up. And then Chumley and I just love it like as a kind of a view into the way people think, you know, like they get into this negotiation and they don't even really care how much they get, but they just want to win, you know? So they're like, I'll go down $50. Well, I'll go up 10. Well, I'll go down 5. Like, it's just this whole, like, I want to win sort of thing going on, which I always find kind of entertaining. But also, you know, clearly in this case, this business that has been around since the 1920s, and it's been a family business for all these years. And so obviously, and clearly Pawn Stars, I mean, they're not all related to each other, but it's a father, son, grandfather, and they seem to do perfectly well. So, you know, certainly there are families that can work together. And so, you know, it's not always a bad idea, but it does bring up some interesting challenges that you don't have if you hire outside your family. I had a bookstore for a while, and I opened that bookstore with my boyfriend, which I think sort of counts as family-ish, and my sister, who definitely counts as family.
Well, that one definitely counts.
Yeah. And also my daughter, who was in middle school at the time, worked.
And she counts also.
Thank you. She worked at the store too. And of course, you know, one of the issues is you can't fire your sister. You can't. You can't do that. Your mom and dad are not going to like you very much if you do that. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break coming up here, and I've got some more weird headlines to share with you, some more discussion of working with family, and all kinds of good stuff. So stay with us. All right, we are back enjoying our jazzy music. Mike's laughing at me, but I love the music. It's fun. All right, we're back. And oh, there we go. Yeah, babe. Work it. Okay, so before the break, we played that clip from Gwinnett Business Radio about the pawn shop out in Norcross, Dynasty Jewelry and Loan. And I also, you know, just as another little follow-up to that clip, I just kind of love that when we can see media and pop culture sort of influencing kind of an age-old business like the pawn business, you know? I mean, I think for myself, I've been in one or two pawn shops in my life more out of curiosity than anything else, and generally speaking, I avoid them. I find them a little bit... I always thought they were a little bit scary until I saw the TV show, and that doesn't look scary at all. It looks sort of cool. And though there was another TV show, I don't remember what it was called, but it was a different family doing some kind of pawn business. That one looked a lot scarier. But anyway, I like that it's sort of a positive influence on an industry, that something so silly as a reality TV show can positively influence a business, I think is sort of fun and cool. So anyway, I was glad to share that. And as I said before the break, if you want to hear the rest of the interview, you can just go to GwinnettBusinessRadio.BusinessRadioX.com. Before we get to the next clip, I have to finish up these weird headlines for you because I just have to. I saw these headlines and I was compelled to read further, and I know you would be too if you happen to catch this one. Woman glued to toilet seat at Home Depot wants answers. Well, who wouldn't? I mean, you're out shopping in a public place, you're at the Home Depot, you got to pick up some wrenches and some, you know, and then you stop into the ladies' room, and the next thing you know, your butt is glued to the toilet seat? Not good. So why did this happen? Not good. Not good. Unclear why this happened. Apparently, they found a bottle of glue in a brown paper sack on the floor of the bathroom, and apparently all of the toilet seats in the bathroom had the glue on them. Perhaps a disgruntled employee. Who knows? I don't think it was targeted at this particular woman, but she was pretty humiliated, and I believe getting her off there really hurt. And I think that's what the article said. And one of the things that it's never happened to me, I'm just guessing. But one of the things that she's upset about, apparently, is the paramedics came and they used WD-40 to get her off this toilet seat. How embarrassing, can I just say? But also, she's kind of wondering why they didn't detach the toilet seat from the toilet and take her to the hospital where they could have given her better care. So I think that's kind of the issue. Apparently, her sister actually filmed this episode, which I question also. And you can hear her screaming as the paramedics get her off.
That'll find its way to YouTube.
The pot. Yeah.
The pot.
The pot. The throne. Moving on to other wacky weirdness. I don't know if you guys caught this story, but this former actress, and there's a Georgia connection to this story, which is why I wanted to bring it up. Her name is Shannon Guess Richardson. She's a former actress and a Flowery Branch native. She pled guilty earlier this week to sending ricin-laced letters to President Obama and New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. She's a 35-year-old who has had minor roles in The Walking Dead and The Blind Side, and I Googled her. She's this pretty woman. She's a little weird looking, but basically, she's pretty redhead, you know, young. She was obviously having some success getting in some of these TV shows and movies, but apparently she was also a wacko. So she did this not because she had some political anger, but because she was trying to implicate her estranged husband and get him in trouble. What are people thinking? This is my question. What is going through your mind when you come up with an idiotic plan like this? Now, she apparently made a plea deal, and she will not spend more than 18 years in jail. But she's gonna spend 18 years in jail for being an idiot and potentially causing some real problems for, you know, the president of our country. I think she should go to jail for more than that, because if he had died because he opened a ricin-laced letter, that's attempted murder of the president. Hello? 18 years is not enough for a wacko like that. Lock her up. Let her be in the prison play. You know, she doesn't need to be in TV shows or movies. Let leave that to people who are not quite as crazy. That's my theory. All right. Moving back to our family topic, I have a clip for you from this past week's Results Matter show hosted by Lee Cantor and Stone Payton. And they're interviewing a woman named Deirdre Brown Collins. She's a founding managing member and CEO of Brown and Pipkins LLC, and it's a variety of divisions of that company: Essential, Essential Technologies, Essential Services, and Essential Construction. And in this clip, she's talking about working with family and setting up her corporate culture to be like family. Take a listen to this.
Now, as you've grown your business, how have you created a corporate culture that engage your employees?
We have a family corporate culture. My business owner and I, we've integrated our families into the business. I think we implored 21 immediate family members.
That's really a gutsy move.
Yes, and we actually have an environment where everyone feels like family. Everyone's very comfortable in that environment, and that's the environment that we have grown throughout our different divisions, whether we're in Florida or whether we're in Virginia, in our Virginia office. Everyone calls Auntie Gail, Auntie Gail. So that really works. We have a high-spirited organization where we allow creativity, and we allow them to put in input. And so that's given us longevity and success. We started the business in 2000, and we're in our preteen stage now.
All right, again, that was a clip from the Results Matter radio show. And you can hear the entire thing by going to resultsmatter.businessradiox.com. And, you know, first of all, can I just say, 21 immediate family members working for the company, that's gutsy. That is gutsy. I'm not sure I guess if it works, it works. I was thinking about, working with family, and I was thinking, you know, if there's already a very clear family dynamic that can be translated to business. For example, when my daughter worked at the bookstore, it was very clear, she was young, she was in middle school, that I'm the boss and she's not. So she has to do what I say, right? Because that's the same dynamic we have at home. I'm the mom, she's the kid, she has to do what I say. Now, if she were my daughter, she's always going to be my daughter, but you know, if it was when she was, you know, if this business was occurring when I was 60 and she was 40 something, I'm making myself really weirdly age there. I'm not 60-something. Anyway, different story, because now she's a full-grown adult with opinions of her own, and she doesn't necessarily want to take orders from her mom, you know, whatever. I just wonder. But, you know, when you're talking about working with your siblings or your cousins or whatever, where you're all kind of on equal footing in the family, but then you have to sort of take on boss-employee roles in the company, that could be pretty challenging. Now, I know a lot of successful family businesses, so I know there's a lot of people that know how to do this and do it right. And certainly, you know, in the earlier days of our country, there were tons of family businesses, and all over the world. I mean, families work together on farms, you know, whatever. It's very common. But I don't know. I think it brings up all kinds of challenges. And the other thing is this whole idea, and she talked about this, about sort of not just having actual family in the business, but creating a corporate culture that's like a family. And this is where I really start to get, you know, a little concerned and wonder how authentic it is. You know, I talk a lot about the business books that I'm reading, and right now I'm reading a book called The Story of Purpose by an Atlanta guy named Joey Ryman, and who runs a company called Bright House that you may have heard of. And this is, I don't know that it's an original philosophy of his or if it's something that, because I've seen it before, and it's, the philosophy is be, do, say. So it's like, be authentic in your purpose, whatever your purpose is. Do things every day that are in line with your purpose, right? And then say your purpose publicly. And this is, the say part is where I sort of have an issue, because if you're saying, I want to have a family company, I want my company to be like a family, if that's what you're saying publicly, but you're not necessarily being it authentically or doing it every day, then you're kind of full of it. I almost said a bad word, but I switched it the last second to full of it rather than full of something that rhymes with it. Just saying. But so here's the thing, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever noticed on the Johnson & Johnson TV commercials, they say Johnson & Johnson, a family company, right? I was also watching TV the other day and I saw a Kroger Christmas ad where they said, you know, from our family to yours, you know, happy holidays from Kroger, right? And so, listen, I don't work for either one of those companies. I don't know. Maybe they really are authentic about it and maybe they really do put it into action every day. And maybe the employees of Kroger and the employees of Johnson & Johnson and the customers of both of those places feel like they're treated like family. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. And I think that's where you get into problems. I mean, if you legitimately, listen, again, I've owned businesses and I have felt a responsibility toward my employees. I've cared about them as human beings and their families and their lives. But to say that they're family, that's going an extra step. And I wonder sometimes if it's just marketing or if it's real. Are they taking advantage of a word that they know has sort of a deep psychological meaning for people and just trying to sell more product? Or are they genuinely, you know, are they the kind of companies that are, you know, paying somebody even though that person had to take time off because they had a heart attack or something like that, like you would for a family member, right? So that's my question. And I just ask you all to think about that internally while we take a break and listen to some commercials where people will market things to us. So stay with us. We'll be back with more headlines, more stories, and more family talk right after this. All right, we are back. This is the Business Radio X Week in Review. I'm Dana Barrett, Mike Roy pushing the buttons here today. Mike Roy is still here. And he's happy because I brought him baked goods today.
And they didn't even last very long.
No, they didn't.
If we didn't have a show, they would have been even quicker. I would have been gone even quicker.
I have a newfound enjoyment for baking, which is most of the people in my life are pretty happy about that. Because I've been actually, I've baked some pretty good things. I've made these chocolate chip cookies. I'm all about now, like, Googling for recipes that I can handle and sort of, you know, because some recipes are just way too complicated for me. I'm just getting started. So I made these chocolate chip cookies and I just Googled, like, best chocolate chip cookie recipe, and I found this recipe. And
I think she found it.
Yeah, they're pretty good. And I also made a banana bread that turned out pretty good. Although the first attempt at the banana bread, I hate to admit this, but it landed on the floor. Halfway cooked, like mush in the middle. Yeah, it was bad. But the second batch came out well. So I'm working on it, learning things, asking for my, you know, when I made my list for Santa, I asked for some more baking tools and utensils. Because it is true, like anything, if you have the right tools for the job, it's way easier. Like, I got a stand mixer back in the spring as a gift from my boyfriend, which was very sweet. And I think he had ulterior motives. He wanted baked goods in the house. But anyway, it really is so much easier to bake cookies when you have a stand mixer. You, like, when you used to, your arm would fall off from stirring, and then, you know, now you just put it in the stand mixer, push the button. It's a beautiful thing.
We've come a long way.
I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So, anyway, I'm enjoying that, and you know, I'm doing it more, I'm finding other tools that I'm missing that would actually make it even easier. So it is true, and it applies not just to baking, but pretty much anything. If you have the right tools for the job, you're going to have the job be easier, more enjoyable, more fun. And that really doesn't segue into anything, but I just thought I would mention it. So there you go. I have a couple headlines I want to share with you about sort of development around town in Atlanta. And I always like to kind of keep you aware of things, because if you don't go to certain parts of town for a while, you may not realize that things are changing and moving, and maybe there's something new that you want to check out. So first of all, everybody who's driven back and forth down I-85, maybe to the airport or in town for an event or whatever, has probably noticed that weird spaceship sort of looking building that's off I-85. Well, that building apparently has been like a variety of different things, none of which have worked, because it's a really weird location. I mean, it's a cool looking building, but it's just sort of like off by itself next to the highway. Anyway, apparently now it's going to become yet another restaurant concept called Cirque. They'll be serving lunch and dinner. They'll have a bar with 15 daiquiri machines, if that appeals to you. It's the proprietor of Daiquiri Factory. Daiquiri, easy for me to see. Daiquiri Factory in Midtown that will be opening Cirque. So this will sort of be a similar type but more upscale atmosphere, supposedly. I'm just going to put it out there, and I apologize to everyone, but I don't think it's going to work. Okay. Something that might work, though, is our little area of Buckhead here where we're... I always say that because we're in Buckhead, live as we do this show.
Yes.
Live from Buckhead. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the construction here in Buckhead that was on hold for so many years because of the poor economy, and that has started up again now. And they've actually been pretty hush-hush about who's coming into this new sort of Buckhead area that used to kind of have all the bars and be kind of the hot spot. Well, some of the information about some of the restaurants coming in has leaked out. Here's what we know. A French bistro called Le Bilbouca. No, that's totally not how you pronounce it. I cannot speak French, and I really apologize. Le blah, 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 is coming in. It has locations in Dallas and in Brazil. And I have to say, it's kind of funny, because if I can't pronounce something, I'm less likely to go there. Because I don't want to call my friends and go, like, do you want to go to Le Blah Blah Blah? Like, I just sound like an idiot. So I'm sure if you walk by, it'll be delightful, but you won't want to make plans because you can't pronounce it. All right. Also, American F&B is a concept from Dallas, Texas. That will be coming in. They're taking a big, big chunk of square footage, 5,500 square feet here in this Buckhead new development. Also, a company called Consilient Hospitality is planning to open a second concept at Buckhead, Atlanta, probably pizza, and it may be called Fireside Pies or 13 Pies, both of which I can pronounce. There's also Lugo Cafe, an Italian cafe concept from New York, Corso Coffee, Doraku Sushi, Georgetown Cupcake from the TLC show DC Cupcakes. That's pretty exciting. I will be stopping there on my way home from the show, I'm just saying, to pick up some cupcakes.
Maybe when I leave here, I'll stop if they're still open.
Yeah.
Or maybe you'll have to bring me one next
yeah,
week.
Yeah, I think. Well, they're not open yet. This is still a ways off. These are just to be.
Oh.
These are just things that are coming. They're not here yet.
I heard you say that, but it got me excited.
You got, yeah. Well, because cupcakes, I got excited too.
Well, I just lit my, yeah, when you say cupcakes, my face just lit up.
And then regardless. Also a place called Shake Shack. It's a burger, hot dog, and frozen custard stand from New York City will be opening in the Buckhead, Atlanta area. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, I'm most excited about the I hate to admit that, but I am most excited about the cupcake place. All right, other development around town. Centennial Olympic Park, looking at some new development. A lot going on there, a lot of plans. Some tentative, as always. You know, you hear news stories. One of the things that's kind of in the way down there is the building that houses the Metro Atlanta Chamber right now. And so there's some talk about trying to tear that down and put something up in its place that won't be quite as in the way of the pretty green space. But that's very much just a rumor at this point. There's nothing official. But they are going to be doing some more, you know, improvements to the park that are easier, cheaper, and faster that will be happening over the next year or two. Can you believe it's been almost 20 years since Centennial Olympic Park opened?
Wow.
1996, right? So
that's right.
So it's 20 years later, and they are going to make some changes. Some of the things they're going to do that are a little bit less crazy than tearing down a building, they're creating a new gateway at the corner of Baker Street and Centennial Olympic Boulevard that will invite people to enter the park with a more attractive entrance, sort of connecting the city and the sidewalks and the park and all that. And this is an interesting one. They're closing off International Boulevard from Centennial Olympic Boulevard to Marietta Street because right now there's almost like the street goes right through the park. So now that'll be closed off and you'll be able to kind of walk back and forth across there. They're also going to be adding a new restaurant and event space where the current park maintenance shed and offices are, and this is the really interesting part, I think. They're building a new, I love the name of this, Band Shell, And it's like a weird thing, but you know exactly what it means, right? If a band is playing, they have sort of protection. They're covered from the rain and all of that. And they're also talking about adding possible seating for up to 2,000 people, permitting ticketed events and obviously, as I said, protecting the stage from the elements so that the artist can play whether it's raining or not. And I think that's really interesting. They've been trying to get a lot more events moving over to Centennial Olympic Park so they can get more traffic down there. One of the things, I think the 420 Festival is going to be in Centennial Olympic Park this year instead of Candler Park. We were talking about that with some friends last night. It's not so good for Candler Park, but it's good for Centennial Olympic Park. One last story I noticed, the John Wieland Homes is reviving a project they had talked about several years ago, I think maybe something like 7 years ago, to build a luxury condo right across from the High Museum. It was supposed to be twice the size it's going to be. It was supposed to be 23 stories and have 96 units, but it's gonna, what they're proposing now is a five-story building with 48 units. I can't buy one. They will be starting at $700,000 and going up to $2.5 million, these condos. What I think is really interesting about that story is for the longest time now, we've only been hearing about apartments going up, no condos, because the condo market, blah, 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 right? Well, now apparently the demand and the supply are lining up in such a way that there is more demand for condos again. And so we will start to see some condo development, although I think it's going to be still very tentative. But it's not like for a couple of years, you weren't hearing anything about condo development. There was a glut in the market, too many, you know, and now we're going to start seeing that again. So I think that's kind of interesting. All right, let's do, do we have time to do our clip?
Of course we do.
Did I leave enough time? All right, let's do this quick clip from the Atlanta Community Food Bank. This is from the Growth Matters show. Take a listen to this.
I really began from the faith side, and I was thinking about justice. I wasn't thinking about logistics. I don't think that anybody should be hungry in the United States of America. I mean, we waste 30% of what we grow and package in this country. It's unmarketable. I mean, that's where we come in. Why would we let anybody go hungry under any circumstance? Even if you don't like the folks, it's smart to feed them. So we also partner with the public sector. We have the contract for TFAP, for all the USDA food that comes into the state. We distribute that. We have a contract with Department of Ag. We're buying food from farmers in South Georgia straight out of the fields. Did over 8 million pounds of fresh produce. We partner with the Department of Education and Bright from the Start and DHS, Human Resources, on summer feeding. You know, only 15% of the kids that are eligible for school breakfast and school lunch access summer meals because they're not available. Huge area for us to grow in. And this is also an area that business grows in. Who's going to provide those meals? So there's many ways, I think, to have partnerships. There's many ways for the community to measure the bottom line, the metrics. Something we're very proud of at the food bank, and I think this is if you're not focusing on this, then you're not going to be sustainable over time. We get $8.47 worth of food out the door for every dollar invested in the food bank. Now, you notice I'm using the language of a banker. The ROI is important. So we feel like we have a good return on investment because much of that food is donated, much of the labor is donated. We're able to leverage partnerships. 94 cents of every dollar goes to program. And, you know, that's as high as any nonprofit in the state. Now, your question was this hard, you know, to for me to approach things this way. If I wanted to be successful, it wasn't a matter of me just begging for food. It was a matter of building strategic partnerships that could last over time.
All right. Again, that was from our Growth Matter show. It's hosted by Michelle Matthews, who is president of the Matthews Consulting Group. And speaking was Bill Bowling, who's the founder of the Atlanta Community Food Bank. A really interesting clip. You can hear more from him if you go to growthmatters.businessradiox.com. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with the soapbox, more family talk, more business talk, more of everything you love. So stay with us. All right, we are back. It's the Business Radio X Week in Review. I'm Dana Barrett. Mike Roy here, happily satiated with cookies and pushing all the buttons over there. I like it.
Well, I like the cookies more than pushing the buttons.
Well, that's understandable. You know,
not that I don't love my job.
That's right.
But,
well,
but cookies. I mean, come on.
We wouldn't want anyone to think that you don't love your job.
Look at me. I mean, I look like I'm having the time of my life.
You do. You do. Okay, so before the break, we had a clip from Growth Matters, a show on businessradiox.com. And the reason I like that clip, you know, is about the community food bank. This is the time of year when we want to think about, you know, we're all eating our big hams and turkeys and lots of side dishes and filling up on cookies and pies and cakes and whatever. And there are people that are hungry. And so helping out the Atlanta Community Food Bank is a good thing to do and a good place to sort of put your charitable thoughts and money and time if you have it. So, so think about that as you do your holiday planning. And also, I just, one of the things I liked about what Bill had to say in that clip was, first of all, he talked about how much they're able to do with a dollar donation. Like, they can really, they're getting like $8 worth of food out for every dollar they get in. That's really incredible. Lots of corporations could only hope to do that well. Now, granted, they get a lot of stuff for free, time and stuff, but still, pretty impressive. And also, he talked about forming strategic partnerships instead of just begging for money or the food to be donated or whatever. And I think that is also a lesson that can go across all businesses and even in life. You know, if you need something from somebody, think about how you can help them in return. And sometimes you get a better result if you're forming a partnership that works for both of you as opposed to just asking all the time. So just thought that was kind of interesting. All right, let's get back to our... Well, you know what? Before we get back to our discussion on families, I want to pull out the soapbox for just a minute because it's holiday season and I'm a little bit of a Scrooge, just going to say. Got a little bah humbug going on over here about certain things. Now, first of all, let me say that I'm a good consumer in that I, a smart shopper, if you will, a professional, I said earlier in the show. I stick by that. So I did what you're supposed to do last year, which is at the end, after Christmas was over, I went out to my local, you know, name brand store, and I bought my wrapping paper for this year at 50% off and some bows and all of that. And, you know, you can't really tell the quality of the paper you're buying because it's, yeah, because it's in a plastic, you know, it's on a tube and it's covered in plastic, so you can't really feel the thickness of the paper. Now, I don't go to use it for basically a year because it's Christmas paper and I bought it on December 26th or 7th or 8th or whatever last year, right? So it sits in the closet all year. This year, I get the rollout, I take the plastic off, and it is the cheapest junk I have ever... they shouldn't even be allowed to make wrapping paper this cheap. It's pathetic. Like, I go to cut this stuff and it's shredding in the scissors. Like, I wrap a present and the corners are coming through of the box, you know, because the paper's so thin...
It wasn't made to survive year-long.
It's
waiting.
Just, it's crap. Can I say that? And it's so...
Well, it's too late now. Too late, yeah, now. You could say it, yes.
And it's so irritating that... I didn't even know such junk existed. I didn't even... When I was buying my 50% off wrapping paper, it did not occur to me that it would be cruddy. Like, who... Why? Ugh. Anyway, the other thing is... And it was funny, because as I was saying that... Mike held up the little canister I bought him, the little Tupperware with cookies.
Yeah, you noticed he started laughing and then didn't really explain why.
Right, well, because there's a bow on top. And it's funny because even the bow is irritating me because...
it's all sparkly.
But it is very pretty and it has adhesive on the back, right? So you peel the sticker off and you stick it on top of something and it's supposed to stick. Well, guess what, Mike Roy? It didn't stick.
Oh, so it's worthless.
Also junk. So I had to take a piece of scotch tape and make a little extra adhesive on the bottom. Come on. Really? You can't put glue on the bow on the... Come on. That
it's
works?
The thought that counts.
I am just... I'm appalled that people can put such junk out on the market. It's just annoying. And really, you have no recourse because I bought it a year ago. I don't have the receipt. And even if I did, I'm quite sure they wouldn't take it back a year later. So they get away with giving you junk. And now I'm like really gun shy. This year when I go out to buy wrapping paper after the 25th, which I will again do, I will not go back to the same retailer where I bought that paper last year because it was such junk. I will try to go to a better retailer and buy their 50% off paper.
Or buy it in February. Maybe it'll survive the 10 months.
I guess, but super frustrating. Anyway, the other holiday bah humbug, if you will, that I wanted to mention is at the awkward moment, and this a little bit happened when I came in the studio today, I had to assure Mike Roy that these cookies were not a Christmas present. Because there is that awkward moment when someone gives you a gift and you don't have one for them. And that has happened. He's trying to give me a pen now. But no, that has happened. That happened to me earlier this week. A business colleague of mine, we got together for a meeting, and she handed me a gift bag. Like, this was just cookies. That's different. I happened to stick a bow on it because I was being cutesy-wootsy. But this colleague of mine, we got together for a meeting, and she handed me a gift bag. And I didn't have anything for her, and I felt, like, awkward. So, you know, this is another thing that comes up in the holidays. Like, obviously, you don't give to receive, because that would not be the point of giving, people. Let me remind you. It's not tit for tat. But it's funny, though, because we also do sometimes set up rules with our significant others or our family members. You know, you can only spend this much, or we're both going to spend this much so that it feels fair. Well, it shouldn't be about fairness, right? And if someone gives you a gift and you don't have something for them, you should be able to just say thank you graciously and leave it at that. And you should not have to buy that person a gift next year or next time or any other time just because they gave you something. But you feel like maybe you should, and that's the problem. It is really
very awkward.
Yeah, it's really awkward.
There's some people you're not sure if they were going to get a present to begin with.
Right.
They're right on the cusp.
Right. Now, here's another example. You know, we're talking about, you know, working with family and families, you know, as employees and corporate culture of family. If you give your employees a gift, they don't have to reciprocate. Right. And they don't all have to give the boss a gift just because they all got a gift. But that brings up a whole other series. We can talk about this next week. But that brings up a whole other topic, because if you give your employees a gift, like a corporate pen, speaking of pens, or, you know, something that they don't particularly want or need but was maybe expensive, was that the right thing to do? Whole other topic. Let's wrap up the family topic with a couple of other quick notes. First of all, of course, you know I love lists. So this week I have a list, the top five reasons not to work with your actual family members. Yes, get the sound effects ready, Mike Roy. At number five, this is a reason you should not work with your actual family members. Number five, they know all your embarrassing teenage moments and might use them against you in front of other employees. At number four, you won't be able to ask your family member to work on holidays because your sister or brother or mom or aunt will be really pissed at you if little Joey misses Christmas dinner. I like the little drum roll there. Yeah. At number three, you might not want to work with your family members because they might tell on you to mom or dad or whoever will most terrify you if you do something they don't like. At number two, they will feel like they can do whatever they want because you can't fire them. And obviously, in at number one, not to be repetitive, but you can't fire them. I would like to point out that you can't fire them. You know, this is the thing. People don't always do what they're supposed to do, whether they're your family members or not. And I mentioned earlier that I worked with my sister, and I love my sister, and I am also quite sure she's not listening right now, so I can talk about her. I can talk trash about her. One time she came to work, she's much younger than me, and one time she came to work at our very casual bookstore in, like, flip-flops and workout pants and whatever. And it created a really awkward moment because as her boss, I wanted to be like, dude, what are you wearing and why are you wearing it here? But she's my sister. So, like, that's an awkward conversation to have with an employee no matter what. But, yeah. And I have to be totally honest. You know, that store doesn't exist anymore, went out of business at a certain point. And before that, you know, my sister left and the leaving wasn't easy. The splitting up of that wasn't easy. And it actually caused a rift in our relationship that took many years to repair. So before you go into business with family members, think all that through. That's all I ask.
Well, an argument with family members can last much longer than an argument with anybody else.
That's absolutely true. And there can be great reasons to work with family. Hopefully you can trust them and, you know them, you know how they're going to operate, what they're going to do. But there's also lots of reasons not to. All right. That's all the time we have today. We'll be back next week. Enjoy your holiday shopping. Enjoy your holiday season. And try to enjoy the last couple weeks of work before the break. We'll see you next week.